Bankless Nation, it is the first week of September. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll Up. This is back to school edition on Bankless. Kids are back to school, so I feel like we should be getting back to school, back to work. Summer's over. Prices can go up. All these things.
Oh my God. As somebody who doesn't have kids, thank you for reminding me that kids go back to school every now and then. All right, what are we covering this week, Ryan?
We got number one, Trump's new DeFi project. Is it a grift? Or is it the most exciting thing to happen to crypto yet? We don't know.
First, the SEC comes for Uniswap. Now it's the CFTC's turn to go at Uniswap. What is going on? What did Uniswap do? If anything at all, we'll cover all that news. And Brazil banning Twitter. Some big moves in the world of authoritarianism versus freedom. We're going to get some takes on that.
Also, the markets are pretty important to talk about. The markets aren't feeling good right now. So the big question is the four-year cycle dead? Yeah. Some investors think the four-year cycle is dead, David. So I want to bring you into that. And also, I've got three takes on why crypto performance, price performance is so lackluster. Three
Ryan takes. Adams' original takes.
Not original, you know, borrowed, but I think good. Curated by Sean Adams.
All right. Polymarket was added to the Bloomberg terminal. We're talking about that. And also, Coinbase is working to bank the robots, the first ever AI to AI transaction using crypto rails. A lot of big stuff happened this week, so we're going to talk about all that and more. But first, a message from our friends and sponsors over at KelpDAO, who want to save you time with their brand new product, Gain, so you can farm all the airdrops possible just using the Gain Vault. Gain will do it for you. You can deposit ETH, RS ETH, or other LSTs and get access to rewards from multiple layer 2 networks, restaking platforms, or other DeFi opportunities with just a single click. So you can stop doing all that farming yourself and just use the KelpDAO Gain Vault to do that for you. There is a link in the show notes to get started. You can withdraw as well at any time. It is non-committal.
All right, let's get to the market this week, David. I'm feeling like we have a down week. Is that right? What are the charts telling us on Bitcoin? Yeah.
It's hard to have an up week when on Monday the trad markets just got clobbered by some just like kind of bearish macro news, something about the jobs. We don't have that in the agenda this week. But as a result, crypto markets also not doing so great either. Bitcoin started the week at $60,000, down 6.2% this week, currently at $56,600. So remember, okay, Ryan, last week we did this whole segment about how October was the most bullish month for Bitcoin. Like historically, it's the month that October. Bitcoin goes up the most. October.
Yeah, it's great.
What month is it right now?
It's not October. I know that. And we started.
It is actually September.
Yep.
So it is actually September happens to be the most bearish month for Bitcoin. In the same way that October is the most bullish. So September is on average, apparently the most bearish month. So I don't know why we did that segment last week, but since this month is September, this is apparently, allegedly, the most bearish month that has historical
Bitcoin
price
action. Oh, yeah. I mean, our message was like basically just, you know, don't look at prices for September and come back in October. Yeah. And that remains true. So I'm looking at this column for September. This is all the way Bitcoin price all the way back to 2011. And the most red on the monthly
it's got
of
the most
any
red.
Month is very much September. The most blue is October. Well, actually, October is a pretty good month.
That makes sense that the worst and best months are back to back with each other. Because then like October is just like the bounce back out of the September dump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So exactly. I don't know. I thought September would be better, but not starting out promising.
It's kind of funny that the first Monday of September that the markets open, just everything just crashes. again, in the trad markets, and then it carries over, spills over into the crypto markets. Ether started the week $2,530, down 7%, currently at $2,390. Lost $150 on the week about. Also, the Ethereum ETF flows, Ryan, looking pretty abysmal. Not great. The ETF, the net outflows every day has been somewhere in the single to double digits for the month of August. There was one double digit outflows on the 26th where we lost $13 million in total AUM. The first 2 days of trading in September, the 3rd of September, negative 47 million. And then the 4th of September, negative 37 million. So it's over $75 million of outflows in the first two trading days of September. As bad as it gets.
Well, actually, so before we get too depressed, if you look at these numbers, the vast majority, in fact, almost all of it, more than all of it, both cases, on September the 3rd and September the 4th were actually from ETHE. Which is nice.
Oh, yeah, right. It's just like for some reason, ETHE just had just two big days.
Yes.
And then yesterday there has been is some 3 million of the 40 million outflows went back into the Grayscale ETH, which has the lowest fees, but $0 million went into all of the other ones. BlackRock didn't get anything. Fidelity didn't get anything. No inflows.
Yeah. So, but basically everything else, the inflows are kind of flat, but ETH continues to drain. That's kind of the story that we're looking at. So yeah,
exactly.
It's bleak, but it's just like not worst case scenario bleak. There are some diamond hands on the institutional side.
If BlackRock was outflowing, that would be a different story. That would be worst case scenario.
That hasn't happened yet. Well, wait for later in September, maybe, for that to happen.
Oh, God.
Things could always get worse. Before they get better, the total crypto market caps, where are we at in the week?
$2.07 trillion, hanging on by our fingernails above $2 trillion.
All right, here's the big question. You know how crypto has traditionally gone in these 4-year cycles, right? So the bull market, and then we have the bust all in one like nice 4-year unit, and then we kind of repeat. We've done this a few times in crypto, like, you know, 3 times at least. Mm-hmm. Some are calling this like the fourth cycle, but the 4-year cycle is dead, according to some investors. This is a report from Outlier Ventures, and let me lay out the case for you here and get your response to this. Basically, the fact that following the 2024 halving, Bitcoin experienced the worst price performance more than 125 days after the event. So the price is now, so the halving happened in April, right? It's April, I believe. And the price is now down 8% compared to previous cycles. Last few times this has happened, we had a 22% increase. So 8% down compared to 22% up traditionally. And the report continues, we believe that 2016 was the last time the halving had a significant fundamental impact on Bitcoin price action. Every halving gets more muted in terms of the, you know, like total percent of Bitcoin supply. So that would kind of make sense. And they're saying basically 2020, the reason that Bitcoin prices went up in 2020, that was kind of just coincidence. It was more to do with COVID and the liquidity injection than it was to actually do with the halving. So the conclusion is the argument that the 4-year cycle still holds in 2024, but that the Bitcoin ETF approval just pulled forward the demand is flawed. It's not true, this report says. The Bitcoin ETF approval was demand-driven, and the halving is supply-driven. Anyway, basically, the report is saying, it goes on to kind of like offer some more data points here. The 4-year cycle is dead. It's not a thing anymore. What's your take on this?
I think that checks out. The 4-year cycle is and always was going to die. Like you can't just have algorithmic 4-year price increases. Like eventually that gets priced in. Like, you know, markets are efficient. The fact that like this, the claim that the 2020 cycle was a coincidence, I also think is very strong. We just had this idiosyncratic event called COVID. Idiosyncratic money printing happened to line up with the 4-year halving. And the claim that just like the reducing Bitcoin inflation is just getting becoming a smaller and smaller impact on the market also just checks out. So I believe it. It makes sense to me.
I'm not sure yet personally whether I'm ready to abandon the 4-year cycle.
I feel like it's concurrently being invalidated.
Yeah.
We're watching it being invalidated.
Right now, but it's September, David. It's always darkest until the dawn. And by the way, it's not because of Bitcoin halving supply. It's more kind of the global macro liquidity that Raoul Paul talks about so much, right? So the tides of liquidity ebb and flow, and that tends to happen on these 4-year cycles as well. Anyway, that's
something to look at. I always thought the 4-year cycles was supposed to be like internally to the crypto industry. That's like what we do. I think if explaining it, justifying it due to exogenous factors, I think also is antagonistic to the idea of like the 4-year Bitcoin cycles, which the rest of the crypto industry follows.
I mean, this is the conclusion of the report. It's time for founders, investors trying to time the market to focus on more significant macroeconomic drivers rather than relying on the 4-year cycle. They're basically 100%, 100%. Don't worry about the 4 years. Just like go focus on other things that are happening in macro. David, right. I've got 3 takes for you on the lackluster price performance that I want to run by you. These are like the answering the questions of why isn't crypto doing anything in this market? No. So here's the first one. Maybe we are in the show me phase of crypto. So
what's that?
My base case is still that we get a strong Q4 crypto rockets. 2025 is going to be good. Similar to, you know, you did that episode with Ledger on kind of like charts and what that looks like. And he's like, hey, this is just the calm before the big bull market in 2025. That's still my base case. But there is another theory, which is we might be in the show me phase of crypto. there's a fair chance that we don't get the new inflows, the new attention from investors. We haven't seen retail come aboard this cycle like at all. It's all the old, you know, crusty people who've been in crypto for a while from last cycle. We're still here.
I do feel crusty.
I feel a little crusty too. But until crypto actually shows the world the new apps, it won't actually get the new retail interest. And like here's a data point. You know, after the dot-com bubble and pop, it took Amazon 10 years to reach all-time high after that. Like 1999 all the way to 2009. Bullish. That's Amazon. Different rules apply for crypto. I'm not saying it's 10 years, but I am saying there could be this show me phase that the market expects from us this time around. They're like, hey, we don't believe it anymore. You can't get away right. on the kind of the hype train. We actually have to see something. So the first possible reason why we've had lackluster performance is maybe we're in the show me phase.
Hmm. Okay. That I kind of think checks out. The dot-com bubble like brought awareness about the internet to everyone. And so like, I think that's what happened in 2021. Like everyone knows about Bitcoin. Everyone knows about blockchains.
Yeah.
Like everyone knows what crypto is now. It's no longer a lack of awareness.
And it was also pretty accessible. It's also been pretty accessible. Yeah.
So that checks out to me.
Okay. So that's the first one. The other is the Fiscandy's take. Basically, crypto isn't the cool kid anymore. Okay. And this kind of pairs well with the first take. He says this, another point on why pure narratives won't save us. Crypto is not the coolest kid on the tech block anymore. So it needs real products that people use. This cycle, AI is firmly taking the spot as the cool kid on the block. As digital finance has nothing to do with a digital super intelligent god. Basically, retail and investors, they've pivoted to AI. You know, there was a time where there was kind of a gap. You know, we'd gone through our mobile phone phase. We'd obviously, prior to that, gone on the internet. We stretched all the Web 2 type use cases, and blockchain was the next narrative big tech thing. Well, the world has moved to a different narrative, and that's AI. AI is getting all this. AI is the cool kid on the block, no longer crypto. And so that's another reason for lackluster performance.
Also checks out. I also think that's right.
Okay. Well, and here is a third take that is maybe optimistic in a way. Depends on what happens, I guess, post-November. But the poster says from Split Capital, a more unpopular take, crypto has never had a product market fit problem. It has only had a regulation problem. If regulations were clear and flexible for new products to work at scale, financial institutions would integrate directly with on-chain products. The take here is basically like... the other reason for lackluster performance is actually not product market fit. Like we do have the killer apps. The regulators just won't let us deploy them. They won't let us like legalize tokenization in a way that brings this to the masses. Right. So until we get through that, we have the product market fit, but they're just like holding the entire industry back. And this probably applies.
I also think that checks out.
Okay. So those are the three reasons for lackluster performance, and all of those check out in your mind.
Yes. The bleak side of this is that all of those are very hard problems. Like, okay, in order to get out of the show me phase, we need real products. In order to get real products, we need good regulation. And good regulation, even with a more favorable administration in the White House, still will take time. Like, we still need Congress to, like, draft good regulation and pass it.
So all of this might mean... this cycle's going to take a little bit longer.
Yes.
I mean, that would be the conclusion here. I mean, things after November could possibly accelerate things if you had the regulatory tailwinds in our favor post-November. Maybe you get this faster. I think that's going to be important on the regulatory side. But to your point, it takes a while to build things. And the builders are doing things in the background. I mean, there's you know, like Polymarket. There's great things going on in layer twos. But it'll take a while to build out the kind of the mainstream use cases, probably.
I do really like this last take though, where like crypto never has had a product market fit problem, even though everyone's the memes, like where are the users? Like we do have a product market fit. That's kind of a contrarian take. I guess that's why he leaves with it being unpopular. But there is this idea that like, if this is true, which I do kind of think like tokenization super real, like Wall Street chomping at the bit in order to like make this work. There is this like pent up value that's being created that's not being expressed in the tokens because builders are still building. Progress is being made by the industry. When we finally get the stars to align, if that takes 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, the longer it takes, kind of the more explosive the bull market is as a result of that. Like once we clear some of these cloudy skies and then AI is no longer cool, and then AI learns that it needs crypto, and then we also get rid of the regulation problem. Like all of those things like line up. The longer it takes, the better that everything will line up. It's kind of my hot take.
Here, the question though for people listening is like, okay, like what should I do? And I think this is sage advice from a DC investor. He's kind of the consummate holder archetype. Mm-hmm. He says this, look, I don't know when we go up. I just know that I've held through hell and back and hell and back and hell and back again and again. And I simply don't fumble the bag during boring times like this when everyone is getting angry and anxious and thinks it's all over. The worst possible time to fumble the bag. And
just accept the bleakness because that's what happens. That's the last September. Thing that happens before things go up.
October is coming, guys. What do we have coming up, David?
Coming up next, Trump's brand new DeFi project. We know more stuff now. Grift, revolution in crypto. It's definitely unexpected. We're going to talk about some of the details and let you decide for yourself. And why the hell did Brazil just ban all of Twitter, along with some of other products out of the Elon universe? What's all of that about? So all of that and more, but first a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice, crypto trading involves risk of loss. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With the Cartesi Virtual Machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open.
The Trump DeFi project that the Trump sons have been talking about, more information has been revealed about this. There's this mysterious page I have open up. It's called worldlibertyfinancial.com. It says coming soon.
World Liberty Financial.
Yeah.
World Liberty.
Very American. The tagline is be defiant. This has been the DeFi project. And like, it's been unclear so far what this is, and it's not now clear entirely what this is, but I think we have a few more hints, a few more detail. There was a time a couple of weeks ago where it seemed like maybe this was like a tokenized real estate type project.
Yeah, it turns out that was wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't. Tell us, what do we know so far, David?
Okay, apparently there's metadata on the website that says the only crypto platform supported by Donald J. Trump. It will connect users to decentralized finance's best tools for secure, high-yield crypto investments, which I think tells us two data points. One, the branding is that it's the only crypto platform supported by Donald Trump. So branding, marketing that to whoever is compelled by that statement.
Yeah.
And then it's a tool to connect finance to secure, high-yield crypto investments. And So it's talking to like the capitalists in Trump's orbits that just really like Trump. CoinDesk obtained excerpts of a white paper that's apparently not publicly available. It is built on Ethereum. It will include a credit accounting system using Aave to facilitate decentralized borrowing and lending, and will offer a smart account and a brokerage. So I'm getting kind of like images of something like Kane's Infinix, which is a more centralized kind of thin front end that hooks into DeFi in the back and offers like kind of like wraps up and productizes DeFi as a service. And it's really good UX because that's what it's like one role is. It's like kind of a centralized UX login with email and password. And then it gets like, you know, savings and yield and investment opportunities sourced straight from DeFi. So it's kind of like white labeling DeFi, if you will. That's kind of like the vibe that I'm getting.
I mean, a few things that are positive, I suppose, right? Because when you hear kind of Trump endorsed and like be defiant and they use DeFi, you're like, is this really DeFi? Well, it's on Ethereum and it looks like it's using Aave. So there's going to be some smart contract platforms. And obviously, Aave is a totally like legit money market DeFi protocol. So some good indicators here. But what about a token? What's the word on the World Liberty token?
Why so curious about a token, Ryan?
Yeah, just wondering.
So reportedly, there will be a non-transferable governance token, WLFI, that eventually, I'm assuming, will become transferable. Why would you ever release a non-transferable governance token? So eventually, there's going to be this token, WLFI. There's this like weird association with Doe Finance, which is a similar like borrowing lending platform. It's like kind of a compound of a fork derivative, which had been hacked previously for $2 million, although there's currently no indication that the vulnerabilities that caused the hack are now part of World Liberty Financial's tech stack. People will be looking at this thing, so we're going to get more details when there's actually more code to be released. But four people from Doe Finance are listed as World Liberty Financial team members: Zachary Folkman, head of operations; Chase Harrow, strategies lead; Octavian Longita, smart contracts lead; and Boga, a front-end developer who is listed as an author in Doe Finance's source code. So that is the World Liberty Financial team. Apparently the previous Doe Finance team members. Maybe this was an acquisition?
Yeah, that part's unclear, but it is clear that some of these are actual Solidity smart contract DeFi developers. Yep. And it doesn't necessarily bode well that Doe was hacked in the past, although DeFi protocols get hacked. CoinDesk was reporting, you know, Zachary Folkman and Chase Hero, they've been involved in some other projects. One which is notable: Folkman previously registered a company called Date Hotter Girls LLC, and he posted seminars on YouTube on how to pick up women. So he apparently has a history as a pickup artist. So he's the guy running operations there. Okay, I guess at some level, the question is like, why are we talking about this? Another sort of, you know, Aave compound money market like fork thing. We've seen like dozens of these. It's because the possible next president of the United States is endorsing
a DeFi protocol.
Has a DeFi protocol? It's kind of a big deal. There's actually a video for this thing tweeted from the official Trump account on Twitter. I'll play this in the background. But what is this? This is like clips from him glowing up crypto at the Bitcoin conference.
It's just a promo video with a bunch of different clips of Donald Trump being Donald Trump. And then the speech in the background, the audio in the background, is just an excerpt from his Bitcoin 2024 conference speech. We were talking about Bitcoin. Talking about crypto.
Yeah, saying I want to make the US the crypto capital of the world. So he's like tying his campaign somehow to this like project and promoting it in this way. Also, Eric and Donald Jr. will be involved. They're the Web2, Web3 ambassadors, I should say. Barron Trump has been purported as the DeFi visionary behind this. So a lot of members of the Trump family involved here. DeFi visionary.
Oh my God.
One question I was asking is there anybody we know from crypto here? Like anybody who's been here, you know, in previous cycles? And one name popped up as an advisor. Corey Kaplan is an advisor to this project. Do you know much about Corey?
I don't know much about Corey other than that I notice him whenever like I'm cruising through Twitter and maybe he like likes one of my tweets. I'm seeing one of his tweets. He's just got like my punk doppelganger. Him and I have the same punk, except mine has a smile and his has a goatee. And so I naturally know him because he's got my punk doppelganger.
You've seen him around.
He's been around. I've seen this guy for like multiple years now. And whenever I would look into this account, I'd be like, oh, I don't actually know this guy personally, but like, it's just a normal person in crypto doing normal things, not grifting. I know that. Like, he hasn't grifted anyone.
That's right.
And so, yeah, like, been like a normal participant in the crypto Twitter universe.
He's actually a founder of a money market platform on Arbitrum called Dolomite, which I've not
right, yeah,
used
and
before.
he was on the Flywheel podcast with DeFi Dave, who I consider very trustworthy and legitimate. And so the fact that he was on that podcast means that he's like passing my sift test.
All right. So some legitimacy here. Like, this looks like a grift from the way it's kind of like marketed, yet we have real smart contract code. DeFi. It's on Aave. Like, what? Okay. So it's safe to say we have no idea what this is. Also, another person that we know, Gabe Shapiro, who's a crypto legal guy on Twitter, he is involved. Apparently, mm-hmm. his firm is getting 1.3% of all of the WLFI token in exchange.
Probably
I
as
for
like
legal
compensation
services.
For legal services.
Exactly. And he said that, you know, not Gabe didn't do this, but his co-founder, Alex, did all of the legal work. And he said, I'm fully supportive of it while not knowing much about it. And I believe it's likely been a very thorough legal process with AM Law 50 law firm advising. So they've checked that box too. I mean, Gabe's outfit is a legitimate crypto legal company. Mm-hmm. And the question I think people are wondering is, based on this limited information, what is this? Is this a good thing? Is this just a grift? And I guess there's maybe two takes here. So the most charitable explanation of this and possibility, I think, is again from LexNode, Gabe Shapiro, who said, my personal guess, and I hope it's presented accordingly, is that this is similar to the Trump NFT thing. It's a way for Trump supporters to signal their support and learn, experience a bit about DeFi at the same time. Aave is real DeFi. It just deposits into Aave, as far as I know. That's what LexNode. So maybe it's just like DeFi, but for Trump supporters?
Yeah. Hey, do you like DeFi and Trump? Deposit into World Financial, World Liberty Financial, whatever it's called.
So that is one possible explanation, but there are some more cynical takes as well, more on the
sure
grift side.
Yeah.
This is Adam Cochran. He said, you're supportive of it? The reskinned of the poorly coded Aave wrapper by a former YouTube pickup artist who had their protocol drained by doing no address validation on user-initiated loops so the hacker could just change the address to their own. You support that being promoted by Trump to a lot of clueless people? Basically, he's saying, like, this is just a Me Too protocol by, like, you know, something that's already been hacked. This is a bad idea for Trump to promote this to, like, a whole bunch of people who are just going to deposit their funds without knowing the risk.
Nick Carter, who is very much in support of Donald Trump's candidacy in support of crypto, he says, I think it generally damages Trump's electoral prospects, especially if it gets hacked. It'll be the juiciest DeFi target ever, and it's forked from a protocol that itself was hacked. It's also an obvious target for the SEC. At best, it's an unnecessary distraction. At worst, it's a huge embarrassment and source of additional legal trouble. I think... what do I think?
He sees a lot of risk here.
I think there is a lot of risk.
This is keeping Nick Carter up at night.
It is funny that Donald Trump is doing this, flying in the face of the SEC. Like, what do you think Gary Gensler is thinking about Donald Trump? Like, does the non-transferable part of the token, is that going to stop Gary Gensler? Like, I don't think so. Like, that hasn't stopped him. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't he?
I mean, if Trump gets elected, Gary's job is gone anyway. If he doesn't get elected, then Gary's coming after him. But so are a lot of people.
Gary versus Trump. That I want that.
this is a surface area for a lot of potential risk.
Imagine the two most litigious people going after each other.
I mean, Nick Carter's going further. He's like, is there something that we as crypto Twitter can collectively do to stop the launch of World Liberty Coin? Like, this is keeping Nick up at night. He doesn't want Trump to go here at all because if this turns out to be some sort of a grift, a scheme, or a hack, I mean, imagine North Korea is looking at these smart contracts right now, and they're looking for holes. Right. They're looking to probe this thing. If they can
imagine North Korea hacking the president of the United States DeFi project.
Like, there's just so much surface area for risk here. And I mean, in the past, when Alex Mashinsky has effed around and SBF has effed around and Do Kwon, they've all like done this. All of the costs have been socialized to our industry. Like,
yeah,
the shortcuts have cost us a lot.
Are you ready for? I'm ready for to give my official opinion. I was ready.
What's your official opinion?
Think it's a grift.
You don't think it's a grift?
I don't think it's a grift. I think it's and yeah. Well, it depends on what you mean by grift. But like, I think that there's no intent to like pump this token and then run away. Like, I think I'm closer to Gabe Shapiro's. This is like kind of brand affiliation thing where if people who like want to just simp for Trump want to deposit in some Trump's Aave front end, then they can go ahead and do that. And like, you know, some people buy JPEGs of Trump and they love them. And I'm like, I don't know why you do that, but I'm not going to stop you.
So you think it's something like, you know, how Trump like has Trump steaks and he brands them with the Trump logo or whatever, and they're just steaks, but because they say Trump, he charges a premium. Yeah. It's something like that.
Is Gary Vee selling like little tiny like marker drawings of things that gets you like drinks with Gary Vee somewhere for like $1,000? Is that a grift? Like, some people don't like it. No one is like feeling harmed by it.
I think the problem with that is like, that's totally fine if you're just doing NFT collectibles and you're just buying JPEGs and such. When people are like depositing, I don't know, thousands of dollars,
more
millions
risk
of dollars,
there, but that doesn't make it a grift. I don't think that makes it a grift.
It might make it a very bad idea, though.
That's a separate conversation.
Well, we'll have to see. The World Liberty Twitter account put out a whole thread on this, David. Rumors are flying, but here's the real story. We know the magnitude of what we're building and its potential impact on both crypto and our country, especially with the upcoming elections. And they're saying we're not taking any chances. We're working with top security experts in the world, and they name them, and they go through this whole thread. And I mean, there's something here. The U.S. pegged stablecoins to remain the world settlement layer for the next 100 years. Hard to know. I guess we'll have to give it more time. We'll find this out.
The Donald Trump DNA is when it sees a business opportunity, it goes for it. And so that's kind of what I see here.
Don't screw it up, though. Please. We can't afford another one of these things. Let's just not screw it up. We'll see what happens.
I mean, he had success with the Trump NFTs. I think he gets to take another
one
shot.
More?
He gets another shot.
Yeah.
The NFTs haven't done anything wrong. They've been totally fine. he gets to go again.
Just a little bit closer to the sun. Just a little bit more.
Yeah.
David, okay. Brazil banning Twitter. I saw this in my feed all weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here?
Okay, so Brazil's telecommunications regulator suspended access to Twitter in order to comply with a Supreme Court order following a months-long case related to hate speech and censorship. The judge said it will remain suspended in Brazil until it complies with all related court orders, including covering a $3 million fine. The judge also freezed Starlink's bank accounts in Brazil's. Yeah.
Wow.
So like really going after Musk. Twitter refused to comply with legal orders to block accounts accused of spreading fake news and hate messages. Twitter claims Judge Alexandre de Moraes threatened to arrest their legal representatives in Brazil if they do not comply. Musk shut down all of its Brazil offices because of censorship by the judge, but the service has remained available. Okay, so then last Friday, Brazilian court required Twitter to name a legal representative in Brazil, but Twitter didn't do that inside of the deadline. Musk argued that the Supreme Court justice was trying to enforce unjustified censorship. The judge insisted that social media needs hate speech regulations. Here's a quote from the article. This decision, implemented in late August 2024, is part of Brazil's broader effort to combat disinformation and regulate tech platforms. Musk criticized the move, framing it as censorship and judicial overreach, while the court framed it as necessary for enforcing Brazilian law and protecting democracy. Okay, so that's kind of the news.
It's quite the juxtaposition. Is this censorship and judicial overreach, or is this just a sovereign country, you know, of Brazil protecting their law and protecting democracy, right? Like, I guess everyone's forced into an opinion on this. I'll say one thing that happened as well that is kind of crosses the line for me is VPN. So if you're in Brazil, you're a Brazilian citizen, and you're using a VPN to access X, there's actually now a fine for doing this, up to $9,000
for users,
day.
For individuals?
Yeah, for individuals. So if you're using a VPN to kind of like bypass all of the like the blocks that they have set up, the fee is $9,000 per day for doing this.
And wait. You can. It's still legal to use a VPN in Brazil.
Correct.
You just cannot use a VPN to access X.
Correct. Which I think is on the path to making sort of
all
VPNs
of
for things we don't like, facto illegal, right? Or like, you know, like fined, because the list of things that they're blocking could just grow and grow and continue to grow. And obviously, and like, how do you enforce a VPN block of this? Like, well, don't you have to start tracing and tracking how citizens are using VPNs, who they actually are?
Anal probe territory. Yeah,
basically. So, I mean, I think we should all just be able to agree that making VPNs like illegal in some form or fashion is like bad. If you're doing that, that's just like not a good thing. But what one reaction that Brazilians had is actually to switch over to completely open permissionless protocols like Blue Sky. That's the Jack Dorsey kind of Twitter thing, I believe. They announced on Saturday that they had registered 500,000 new users in Brazil over the two previous days alone. So it became the number one app in the App Store in Brazil. So citizens looking to kind of like bypass this speech censorship. I guess my take, David,
current population of 220 million people in Brazil and 500,000 of them signed up for Blue Sky in like 1 week. That's a big move.
Yeah, it's not nothing. My take on this is it's concerning. Again, it's kind of like the Pavel case we were talking about last week. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like where this is going, right? You arrest Pavel Durov in France. You make VPN access of Twitter de facto illegal in Brazil. We've got Tornado Cash developers getting jailed. I feel like this honeymoon period that we've enjoyed on the internet over the last, say, 20 years between governments and the internet, where they're like, it's innovation, it's job creation, it's great for productivity. I feel like that's coming to a conclusion in the 2020s. Like, that's over. Now they're like, we want control. This stuff is dangerous. Right. And so if it's not decentralized and if it can be controlled, it will be either controlled or it will be killed. I think the world is moving in that direction, and it's concerning.
Yeah. There's just this consistent, like, a rock and a hard place by everything like this these days. Like, Musk's version of X is not the bastion of free speech that he touts it to be. Like, the algorithm is just, like, out of control. Anyone on Twitter can see it. Does banning it, like, does a sovereign country banning it mean that's the correct solution? Like, ooh, also yikes. Like, neither of these things are great. I agree with your line that banning VPNs is, like, now that's, a like, objectively a bad thing. But like Musk versus Brazil, like I don't really have, like, I'm not going to line up behind Musk here.
It's hard. Yeah, I think there's a lot of these cases that are going to be difficult moving forward.
Sadly, this isn't the only topic of hostile governments approaching these new technologies. This was probably the worst thing that I saw on my timeline this week. The Binance executive Tigran, who has been in custody in Nigeria for like 6 months now, there was a video of him that surfaced walking around limping on crutches as he was walking into court, commanding that he is innocent and that he cannot be treated like this. He's saying, I'm not okay. This is effed up, in the video as he's like asking for assistance from a guard to go walk into his courtroom. He's been denied the use of a wheelchair. The fact that he needs a crutch or a wheelchair at all is like ridiculous, because he was fine when they arrested him. So these injuries he sustained has been sustained in Nigerian custody. This is a United States citizen. This is a Binance executive who is a United States citizen. Tigran has a background in anti-money laundering and counterterrorism finance. He was an official U.S. government official. He's been in Nigerian prison for 6 months without due process and has not had any support of any of our American governments or officials. We need to go get this man and bring him back to the States. The fact that he has just been left in Nigeria without having any sort of due process, being abused in prison for 6 months, and like no government official in America is just like caring about this, is kind of egregious.
I mean, I've seen, French Hill, Representative French Hill, who we had on Bankless, he's spoken out about this. I've seen a handful of Congress representatives speak out about this, but the White House has been completely silent on this. And this is, again,
is it because of their crypto stance?
I don't know. Right.
We need to send people and go get him and bring him back home and put him back with his family.
Negotiate hard. Like, I mean, we
do something.
Yes. Because he is just
like, he is a hostage. There's a country that is holding a United States citizen hostage without due process. But go get him.
I think that it's safe to say he's a crypto political prisoner. And
yes. Yeah. He's a political prisoner.
Anyway. hopefully things turn around in that situation.
Moving on to more exciting things that are less depressing. Coming up next, the CFTC is coming at Uniswap this week. Are they the new SEC? Uniswap just collecting all the four-letter agencies' badges, but also some big releases in Ethereum land. Remember Euler, that DeFi lending protocol that got hacked? Well, it's coming back. Arbitrum is releasing its much-anticipated stylus upgrade. What is that going to do for Arbitrum? Polymarkets inside of Bloomberg and AIs are using crypto to transact with each other. Really cool stuff, much less depressing. So let's go ahead and get into all that stuff. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from Eigen. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. The Uniswap extension is here. The self-custody wallet created by the most trusted team in DeFi, Uniswap Labs, designed to make swapping feel effortless. This extension lives in your browser's sidebar, letting you swap, sign transactions, and send or receive crypto without ever losing your place on the internet. Plus, with human-readable transaction messages, you'll always know exactly what you're signing. Navigate a multi-chain world effortlessly with support for 11 chains like Ethereum Mainnet, Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. No more chain switching or token importing. All your assets are right where you need them to be. The Uniswap extension is designed to level up your swapping experience with other Uniswap Labs products as well. Easily onboard to the extension using the Uniswap mobile wallet to begin managing your assets across platforms and take advantage of smooth, seamless synergies with the Uniswap web app. So go and download the Uniswap extension today by clicking the link in the show notes. Just another way Uniswap is helping you swap smarter.
Arbitrum releases Stylus. All right, what is this, David?
Stylus has been under development by the Arbitrum team for a very long time. It enables developing a Solidity smart contracts in any language. So if you're a developer that knows C, C++, Rust, Go, Python, JavaScript, Ruby, Kotlin, didn't know that that was a programming language, you can now become a smart contract developer. You don't have to go through Solidity. You can just use your normal language, and Stylus will collapse everything down into the bytecode that runs on Ethereum. So no longer learning Solidity. So that means yesterday, 30,000 developers who knew Solidity could build smart contracts. Now with Stylus, 15 million, as in like all the people who knows all the aforementioned coding languages. It's kind of all of them, yeah.
Yeah, it's the great thing about Wasm is it supports all of these languages out of the box. So if that's been a holdup for some of these developers, hey, I don't want to learn another language. I love JavaScript, or I love Python, or I love Go. They can now write smart contracts in those languages. This is a really big upgrade. David, I remember a time when entire layer ones were built on this premise of like, we are like Ethereum, but we're better because we have Wasm support. And we can onboard all of the developers over the world. Whereas, you know, if you're developing on Ethereum, you have to learn Solidity. So now that's come to Ethereum, which is pretty fantastic.
I don't know anything about like deep programming like this, but it seems really hard. Like, you don't have to write Solidity. You can just go compile straight to bytecode with other languages. I don't know. I don't get it. But nice job, Arbitrum. Congrats on the release. I know you guys have been working on this for a long, long time now. I would like to see how this works in the wild. Like, does this actually attract new developers? Like, what are the big strengths here?
Another big release this week, Euler is back. Okay, so what is Euler? You might recall it as a DeFi lending protocol, has some permissionless features. It's sort of like an Aave or a Compound. Like, you can spin up like all sorts of separate tools and support other assets. But in March 2023, it was hacked. I believe this hack was associated with North Korea. It was like a Lazarus group type of attack.
No, that was everyone's first impression. It ended up being this like freaking kid who was just punching way above his weight class, and who ended up giving all the money back over the month or so.
Well, because it was a lot of money. It was like $200 million,
$200 million. Yeah, and Euler just did a fantastic bang up job recovering all the money, like contacting FBI. They totally figured out who the exploiter was. It was I can't remember if it was like a high schooler, some really young guy. who just got totally outplayed by Euler, and then they were able to manage to recapture, give all the money back. There was this huge like distribution process where like victims of the Euler hack were able to get their money sent back to them. But it also just like caused a really big stain on Euler, the system, because they got hacked. It was a permissionless, like immutable code system that if it gets hacked, it's like pretty catastrophic, because it's not like Aave or Compound, which are governance-based lending markets. This one has always been built as governance minimized, governance reduced. And so like hands off, no oracles, very, very bankless, but also very fragile. They have been heads down building V2 for ever since then.
I mean, because usually after a hack like that, you'd throw in the towel, it'd be over. But like, yeah. Michael Bentley, he put a blog post about this, of how difficult it was. I read through that, and he had
his first kid when it got hacked.
Absolutely terrible. But they're back, and they have a pretty major release. This is a V2 of the protocol. So what does V2 do?
Okay, so V1 was just a similar lending protocol, similar to Compound and Aave, but just with different risk parameters. In V2, they're calling it a meta lending protocol. It enables builders to create highly customized borrowing and lending vaults. It also opens up the use cases for on-chain credit and eliminates fragmentation and capital inefficiencies related to isolating the lending market. So I'm going to call this similar to Morpho, a newer borrowing and lending application on the scene with a different back-end construction to kind of maximize ROI and minimize risk, but also really leaning into the same thing that Morpho is also leaning into, which is governance minimization. Aave has kind of dominated the centralized liquidity model of Aave, the centralized pools. So like all pools, everything is kind of pooled together in Aave. Morpho is really segregated accounts. Euler's a little bit in the middle, but also really leaning into just as little governance as possible. So some benefits that Euler claims for its users: you can choose between risk-isolated lending pairs or cross-collateralized vault clusters, which is where it's similar but also different than Aave. You can opt into passive lending or fixed parameter vaults and manage your own risk. Vaults can support ERC-20 tokens, real-world assets, synthetic assets, or even NFTs. It's totally open. And some other cool bells and whistles as well. Tons of audits, as you could imagine. 31 audits. 31 audits. Wow.
I hope that's enough.
And then there is a $1.25 million audit competition that completed, and a $3.5 million capture the flag with Hats Finance. So they just audited the shit out of this thing. There's also a bug bounty program as well. So honestly, Michael Bentley and all of the Euler team, who kind of went through hell to like live through Euler V1, its exploit, and then Euler V2, and then bring Euler back and deliver with V2 over just like however long it's been, over a year and a half now. That's some of the biggest grit I have ever seen in crypto. Yeah.
Welcome back. That is impressive. Welcome back. Well done, guys.
Yeah. I hope you guys feel really, really good. Brand new type of protocol. I know like V1, we've seen a little bit of V1, and V1 was adoption was doing really well in 2022 and even into 2023. And so like adoption was growing before like the hack came, and then we all know how 2023 went. So really hard market. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how well Euler V2 can compete in the market. Aave is this gargantuan. Morpho is also pretty damn big now. What can Euler do in this market with this brand new construction? I am curious.
David, you pointed out that Celestia has released their product roadmap as well. Mm-hmm. Anything notable here?
I'll call it a technical roadmap. The way that they have it constructed is very similar to the way like Vitalik illustrates the Ethereum roadmap. So
a little more polished here.
little more polished. They have Vitalik drew him himself. I think Celestia has a designer with him. So three main tracks that they have categorized: there's abundant block space, verifiable block space, and frictionless block space. There's a link in the show notes if you want to see Celestia's technical roadmap. I hope somebody does an episode about that. Maybe it's us.
Kind of a cool box to check here too. Bloomberg, the Bloomberg terminal. Do you see it? You ever had access to one of these Bloomberg terminals, David?
No. Every time I only see it through screenshots.
It's so old, right? It looks like something in the
1980s. So old.
But it is like legendary. I mean, this is still a financial service that, it's hundreds of thousands of financial professionals subscribe to.
What is a terminal?
It's from the 80s, dude. It's got all the financial information. Anyway, now that we've denigrated it, they've added Polymarket to the terminal. So if you want to search for Trump versus Harris and the prediction markets there, or Any market that Polymarket has is now integrated into Bloomberg. So that's just kind of a cool box to check. This is Shane, founder of Polymarket, saying the Bloomberg terminal has now integrated Polymarket, entering mainstream news and finance before our eyes. What was once a fringe sci-fi idea for transforming the flow of information is now becoming the new normal as tens of millions of people have it around relying on Polymarket forecasts as a source of truth. I think this is actually true because once it gets in Bloomberg terminal, there's nothing like more blue chip finance than getting there, right? Yeah, and so all the financial analysts will start referring to the Polymarket
very
data
legitimizing.
Source. Yeah, very cool.
I wonder how strong of a top of funnel that'll be for Polymarket.
I don't know. It'll be great for the propagation side of the information that prediction markets are putting out, though. Let's get to the CFTC thing. So I saw this tweet in the story originally. I was like, what is going on? So there's something going on. It's not as bad as it first sounds. So the CFTC has apparently charged Uniswap with illegal derivatives trading. What is this?
Okay, so the way that I think this works, pretty sure, is that inside of the Uniswap front end, you could go buy a leveraged token. So the Uniswap front end listed and showed a leveraged token. So users of Uniswap could go buy that from the Uniswap front end that Uniswap Labs controlled. As a result of that,
An example of this, David, would be like if I wanted to do like a 2x ETH or something like that. 2x long ETH.
Yeah, 2x FLI ETH. Yeah. Yeah. There are many of these like leverage tokens where there's like leverage built into the token. Yeah. And you can go buy one of those on Uniswap. And the Uniswap Labs didn't remove those from the front end because why would they? And the CFTC has said, well, now you guys are offering leverage trading to US retail investors. Uniswap Labs just agreed to settle for a whopping $175,000. By whopping, okay, I'm being facetious. That's very small. And this is specifically in a no admit, no deny settlement. So I'm thinking they're saying in this settlement, they're not like accepting like fault. They're not like, this is not a guilty plea.
Yeah.
They're just settling for $175,000 to make this thing go away.
I got it. Yeah, I think a concern here is like, what's going on? Is the CFTC becoming a bit more like the SEC, where this is just an enforcement action, right? It was not necessarily like a warning. There's no kind of like a comment period or anything. It's just going straight to enforcement. And this is the CFTC's director, Ian McGlinley, saying the CFTC's enforcement division will vigorously enforce the CEA as digital asset platforms and DeFi ecosystems evolve. DeFi operators must be vigilant to ensure that transactions comply with the law. There were some dissenters, though, David, a couple of commissioners who actually said that this enforcement was not a good idea, not in the best interest of the CFTC. So Commissioner Summer Mercinger said, it was my hope that one day soon the commission would consider rulemaking or at very least guidance, making clear how DeFi protocols could comply with them. Unfortunately, today is not that day. So he's basically saying we should cooperate, provide guidance rather than doing this enforcement action. Caroline Pham is another CFTC commissioner. She also dissented. She said it was a violation of the Administrative Procedure Act for the commission to establish such sweeping interpretations in administrative settlement orders rather than engage in notice and comment rulemaking. Notice and comment is where you say, hey, here's what we're thinking. Here are the rules. Industry can comment on it. The public can comment it. They didn't do that. They went straight to enforcement. So she said, I'm puzzled how we can charge the respondent, that is Uniswap, based upon no evidence beyond the word leverage appearing in the names of these tokens. So it seems like some at the CFTC are taking a chapter out of the Gary Gensler playbook.
All right, coming into the last and perhaps the coolest news of the day of the week, the Coinbase Developer platform, updated their MPC wallets to enable LLM or AI models to conduct payments. So this is an article that was released by Brian Armstrong on Twitter, and it starts this week. This week at Coinbase Dev, we witnessed our first AI to AI crypto transaction. What did one AI buy from another? Tokens, apparently. Not crypto tokens, but AI tokens. This is it's like a double entendre, kind of a pun or something. Tokens are like this thing in LLM models that are like how like LLMs work. It's just the fact that we use tokens in the crypto world is like also kind of funny. So Brian Armstrong in his article says, AI agents cannot get bank accounts, but they can get crypto wallets and they can use USDC on Base to transact with humans, merchants, or other AIs. Those transactions are instant, global, and free. This is an important step to getting AIs to get useful work done, he says. And so Brian is saying like, hey, there's like frictions. AIs can't use Stripe. They don't have credit cards. They don't have bank accounts. But smart contracts, Ethereum, blockchains speak the same language as AI, which is code. And since they're permissionless, then AIs have all the tools that they need to pay for the services of other LLMs. I use ChatGPT. I pay for it. It's a great service. But AIs cannot do the same. And so Brian is saying, look, we just had this one AI, but pay for the services of another AI using USDC on Base. And I think this opens up, you just use your imaginations, imagining all these AI agents who are providing value to us humans start to provide value to other AIs. And all of a sudden we can get this AI economy growing.
Yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible that Ethereum turns out to, it's bootstrapped by humans, but it turns into like a property rights system for the machines. Mm-hmm. I totally see AI agents can't walk into a like Wells Fargo and get a bank account. They don't have a citizenship. They like, it's not set up for them. Right. But programmable smart contracts and programmable basically smart contract based accounts are effectively what they will use to bank and communicate and exchange with one another. Right. And a lot of this will be bot to bot, agent to agent kind of driven in the future. In fact, this was like a thesis that, you know, seems pretty obvious and is going to play out. And this was originally what you and I wanted to talk to Eliezer Yudkowsky about. Do you remember that? This was like our agenda. We were like, okay, cool.
Before he sent us on a 3-month detour.
Yeah, we were like, hey, Eliezer, like going to that, you're very familiar with AI. You can tell us about the latest and the greatest. And we've just built this thing in crypto that we think is going to be a great digital property rights system for AIs autonomous AI machines. Yeah, AIs are going to love it. And then about 5 minutes into that conversation, we realized that he actually thinks AIs are going to come destroy us. And like, we, you know, it's not a good thing from his perspective that
This is bad. They're colluding to take over the humans.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, made me feel sort of sheepish, like, oops, maybe we just created a financial system for alien species takeover, that wants to destroy us. Anyway, hopefully
in the meantime, it'll be sick.
Hopefully that doesn't happen. So we end with the meme of the week. David, what are we looking at?
Okay, so this is my meme. My mom just texted me out of the blue this article from some website, Financial Review, and the title is, "Crypto owners are more likely to have psychopathic traits, study says." And then her comment to that is just, "Ha, ha, ha." And that's all she sends me.
Did you read this study, by the way?
No, I did not read that study.
It's a real study. I actually read the study itself. It was like a NIH funded grant to study this.
Oh, it's actually like a well done study.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well done is, I guess,
subjective
somewhat. But they go through like the Machiavellian dark triad personality traits. And they're like, crypto holders have a lot of these and they're predominantly male. And they go through a whole psych analysis. They get their news from non-mainstream sources and all of these things, you know, not necessarily uncomplimentary aside from this one, you know, the Machiavellian traits and the psychopathic traits. But it's a real study that your mom is seeing in mainstream news here.
So for context, my mom is a forensic psychologist, so she knows extremely well just the world of stats and studies around psychology related subject matter.
Forensic,
so
this, too.
Yeah. She goes to court and shit.
Oh, wow. Well, you should you should send her the actual, like, get her to read the actual study and give her professional.
Oh, I'm sure she did. She didn't just send me the headline. I'm sure she read that.
Was there any back and forth or just like?
No, I did not respond to this. I did not respond to this.
She thinks you're a psychopath now. I was wondering. It's in the back of her mind, David. All right, let's close this out. We're going to get to risks and disclaimers in a moment. But if you are watching on YouTube or even on Spotify, there's something special. There's a QR code somewhere here that you can go scan and get access to the Bankless premium feed. We call this the citizen feed, and we publish a lot of extra material on there. It's like bonus content, our debriefs after the episode. It's fantastic. It's no ads, by the way. So if you've gotten to this point in the roll-up, I know you are a dedicated Bankless listener. Yeah. And if you're hearing this, you're not yet on the Bankless premium feed. There's opportunity to go get that and do that. I think we have Spotify 10.
It's the more
10.
Fun feed.
It's the better feed. Spotify 10 is a discount code where you can get 10% off that. And you scan the QR code to make that happen. All right. We'll end with this. Of course, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.